From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois is continuing its slow march toward a $15 minimum wage. Under a law signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker in 2019, the minimum hourly wage has gradually increased over the past few years. At the start of this year, it got a bump to $13 an hour, and it'll go up by a dollar again at the start of next year before finally reaching $15 at the beginning of 2025. Many questions still linger about the state of the minimum wage in Illinois. Has it affected businesses in a negative way, as some critics of the 2019 proposal worried it would? What has it meant for working people in Illinois? And as the U.S. recently reckoned with levels of inflation not seen since the 1980s, will $15 an hour be enough by the time the minimum wage reaches that level here? We're going to spend the first part of today's show listening back to our conversation that answered some of those questions. With us for this was Audra Wilson, president and CEO of the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, an organization based out of Chicago that focuses on the intersection of economic and racial justice. Also with us, Rob Carr, president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, which represents the interests of stores at every level of government in Illinois. He's been in that role since 2014. Also with us for an on-the-ground perspective was Tyree Johnson. He works as an overnight sales clerk at a 7-Eleven store in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. Before that, he worked for McDonald's. He's also part of the Fight for 15 movement. Because our program today is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know your thoughts on this conversation or anything else we talk about by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is our conversation on the minimum wage in Illinois. Tyree, I want to start this conversation with you because a lot of workers who make minimum wage in Illinois do work in retail. So just tell us a little bit of what's it like for you working at 7-Eleven.
It's okay. It has its benefits, but you have to stay alert and, you know, because your store can get robbed at any time. And you have to take precaution. You can't be sleeping on a job and playing around. You have to stay alert and focus on what you have to do to get through your day.
Yeah. Are the wages you're making now enough for you to meet your expenses and bills in your life?
With the hours I'm getting, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point you make.
Yes.
As opposed to
McDonald's for 7-Eleven, yes. It's good for now.
Yeah.
But one thing about 7-Eleven, if the boss seeing you, you know, doing better, and he will reward you with a raise. McDonald's, the harder you work, the longer they take to give you a raise.
Oh, interesting. You know, and I understand one of the reasons you left McDonald's had to do not so much with the pay, but rather the scheduling, or rather, I guess, not being scheduled. Can you say more about that?
Not being scheduled.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have the desire to go back to a McDonald's. You know, I've given McDonald's 30 years. I've dedicated my whole life to McDonald's. And when you graduate from high school, you set your sights higher on better opportunities. I couldn't get a computer job, so I settled for a McDonald's job in 1992. Minimum wage was $4.25 when I first started. It went from $4.25 to $5.25 to $6.25 to $8.50. And now I was at $15 before I left. But when COVID came, I just said, you know what? I had a 7-Eleven job to fall back on. My cousin got me started in 7-Eleven in 2014. She said, you struggling at McDonald's? You want to work at 7-Eleven? I was scared to take the job because of all the robberies that were going on at 7-Eleven. I was scared to put the application in and get hired. But she put in a good word to me, to one of her bosses, and he hired me back in January of 2014. And I've been there 9 years. And I can put money up for savings. I can, take care of my family and do what I ever have to do to stay alive. With McDonald's, I just don't have the desire to go back to McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah. So, Audra Wilson, let me bring you into the conversation now from the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. How does what we've been hearing from Tyree talking about speaking to some of the challenges speak more broadly to what minimum wage workers are facing?
I think Tyree was the perfect person to really exemplify the conversation that we're having today, better than any sort of talking head, because he has just basically laid out why anyone who is working 40 hours a week should be able to make enough money to make ends meet. And the fact of the matter is that Illinois' minimum wage has been insufficient to meet a family's basic needs. But it's not just in Illinois. This is a crisis around the country. People don't realize the amount of people across the country who are working at what's considered low wage work, so at or slightly above minimum wage, about 44% of Americans age 18 to 50. And so low wage workers commonly face health and safety issues on the job, which Tyree just talked about. And this risk has also been disproportionately borne by workers of color who tend to be overrepresented in these frontline essential work settings. Essential was the word of the day when it came to the pandemic. You know, we lauded our essential workers and how valuable they were, but not recognizing these were individuals who had no choice but to be on the front lines, no choice but to be exposed to COVID because that's the jobs that they had. And yet they were the ones who oftentimes did not have access to paid sick leave, to paid time off, to childcare, to transportation. They had none of these and no protections or very minimal protections. Even remember the whole PPP, the personal protective products or devices, like masks and gloves. So this is a crisis, and he's just exemplified this. Also, when he talked about the hours, because now that he's making some more money, so the question is, as long as I have enough hours, because oftentimes there is an inability to get the hours that are needed, even if people want them. And sometimes people feel compelled to work hours without pay under pressure from their employers. So it is important for us to talk about minimum wage, and we didn't even start to talk about the sub-minimum wage, which people aren't always aware of, that folks in the restaurant industry are dealing with. But it's more than just about money. It's about conditions. It's about hours. And the fact that we are not respecting the very people upon whom we depend the most, especially it was present during the pandemic.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about the minimum wage in Illinois, which this year bumped up to $13 an hour. It's still gradually on its way to $15 an hour in 2025. Of course, we've already seen a number of companies even raising wages higher than that on account of the labor shortage that we've seen since the pandemic. And we're going to talk more about that a little later in the conversation. We're talking about all this with Audra Wilson, who is president and CEO at the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. Also Tyree Johnson, who works at a 7-Eleven in Chicago, Illinois. And Rob Carr is also with us, president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. And Rob, I want to bring you into the conversation now. It's been, as I mentioned, about 4 years since the state's current minimum wage law was signed by the governor. What effects have you seen from the business perspective in that time?
Well, Brian, again, thanks for having it. I think it's hard to say what the impact was as it was relates to the minimum wage because of the pandemic. We know from previous experience that there were clearly in other jurisdictions, clearly impacts as a result of increases. But the pandemic, frankly, threw everything out the door. Any experience went out the door. And the pandemic has introduced a whole new dynamic that we continue to deal with today. So it's really impossible to say what the direct result would have been, whether we would have followed the impacts that were seen in other jurisdictions or there would have been something different.
Well, that's a good point then. So let's talk more about that, because we've seen retailers and other businesses acting on their own to raise their minimum wages. I think I saw recently that Walmart announced it's raising its minimum wage from $12 and now it's going to be $14 an hour. What do you make of that? What does that say about the state of the market?
Well, I think first, I think that Walmart number is actually higher, but certainly there are others that are more than that. I mean, you regularly see postings north of, you know, $15, $16, $17 an hour for starting workers with little or no experience. The result is because of labor shortages. It's the market at work, exactly what we have all indicated has always worked, which is the market. The pandemic resulted and has resulted in a significant number of people, particularly older citizens, who are choosing no longer to engage in part-time work in particular. We know from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that there are 10.5 million job openings last month, which was similar to the month before. And yet, in that, even with all of the raises that you indicate, all of the increased offerings, in that same period, there were 4.2 million quits. Employees who are choosing to leave their job, that number was three times the number of those who were dismissed. So the argument has always been that you pay more, you'll get more, less turnover and more employees. And even today, we're not seeing that to be the case.
Audra, I want to ask you about the broader picture here in Illinois. So these increases in the minimum wage, do you have a sense for how many people that affected in Illinois?
I don't have the exact number of the amount of people who were or impacted by a raise, the increase in minimum wage. But I do want to clarify something. Rob made a point, and I think it's important to understand that when you're looking at the number of vacancies now, because he is correct, there are more people who have chosen to leave their jobs voluntarily. And it is not just the lure of increased wages, to get people in the door. It is important because people have to be able to support themselves. But I think it is important to understand that you have to look at the conditions of employment. Many people felt like they had some leverage right now because for the first time they were being focused on during the pandemic to say that we are working in conditions that are dangerous. And I think Tyree exemplified that. To say that, yes, I could get more money here and I could support my family, but at what cost? I am concerned about safety. I am concerned about the fact that there are robberies and what sort of safety measures will my employer put in place to make sure that I'm okay? So there is a cost to just to getting more money in some of these jobs. And so I do think it's important to put that into the equation as well, that it is true. It's not just about increasing wages, although that is certainly a very important and a key point. But you have to look at the combination of wages as benefits. And now that Illinois has just passed and waiting for the governor's signature, paid time off, to think that in the United States, that we are only the 14th state to actually have mandatory paid time off, and it's only 5 days. But that there are so many employers that were not offering paid time off. So during the pandemic, you had people who would either show up to work sick with COVID or just quit because they were saying, "This it's just not worth it. And I'm not about to sacrifice myself and my health for this low wage job." So this is a much more nuanced conversation that we're having. And we have to look at the entirety of the factors, wages being very important front and center, but also looking at conditions and benefits and hours and opportunities for ascension.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation, first broadcast in January, about Illinois' slow march toward a $15 hourly minimum wage. We looked at how companies have responded and the questions that are still out there. Joining us for this was Audra Wilson, President and CEO of the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and Tyree Johnson, who works overnights as a sales clerk at a 7-Eleven store in Chicago. Because our conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls, but we always want to hear what you thought, so you can leave a voicemail anytime, day or night, at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. Tyree, can you talk about that then? Do you feel like your employer has, you know, been responsive to your concerns about safety and other issues you have that are beyond wages?
No. At 7-Eleven, yes. At McDonald's, no. My supervisor at McDonald's had a meeting with the general manager, and they only wanted to keep a limited number of employees, you know, all employees who worked there before the pandemic started, a lot of people decided to just walk away and never come back. And that's when I shifted gears to 7-Eleven and said, you know what? 7-Eleven is paying me more. You know, they're giving me a set amount of hours, enough to keep my food on the table and keep, you know, provide for my family. So I just stick with 7-Eleven and just, you know, keep, just withhold my labor from McDonald's until they want to bargain with me and let me know that I can come back in good faith with more hours and more, you know, and benefits.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of our conversation on the slow increase of the minimum wage in Illinois. Joining us for this was Audra Wilson, President and CEO of the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and Tyree Johnson, who works overnights as a sales clerk at a 7-Eleven store in Chicago. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're listening back to our conversation on Illinois' minimum wage. It's currently $13 an hour, but it's on its way to $15 by the year 2025. We talked about this with Audra Wilson, who leads the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, Rob Carr with the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and Tyree Johnson, who's an overnight sales clerk at a 7-Eleven store in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. He's also part of the Fight for 15 movement. Because our show's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, here now is the rest of our conversation on Illinois' minimum wage. Audra, I want to ask you, we asked our listeners in our text messaging group about the minimum wage, and Amy in Wakanda, Illinois, said, thought the minimum wage is better, but the corporate profit grab of the pandemic has nearly wiped out the increase. It's only a scraping by wage, not a living wage. In cities, you need more like $25 to $30 an hour to live. Thank you, Amy, for that message. So, Audra, we've heard that term, living wage, a lot in the national conversation over wages. What exactly is a living wage? How does that differ from the minimum wage?
Certainly. So the living wage will vary from minimum wage, and it will vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction or city to city. It's oftentimes the amount of money that it would take to, you know, to support, like, so I'll give you an example for Illinois or for Chicago. If you're talking about a single adult supporting two children living in the Chicago metropolitan area, so you're talking about the average for rents, the average for the cost of living, it takes all those factors into consideration, then you are talking about something closer to $40 or more an hour. And again, this is presuming that people are working 40 hours per week, which has been, or 37.5 hours, which is our standard work week. So living wages and minimum wages will differ. And more often than not, the living wage is going to be higher because it really takes into consideration all these other factors into the actual costs that people incur in living in a particular city or town.
Tyree, what does a living wage mean to you?
It's what you need. Like you said, it's what you need, not what they want you to have. It's what you feel you need to sustain a decent living.
Do you feel like your wage increases, not necessarily the minimum wage, but wage increases in general, have they given you a living wage?
They nickel and dime me over the years, and you know, to where it frustrated me to where I just said, you know what? I'm losing interest. I'm ready to move on, do something else, because this is not going to help me survive. I have to keep, you know, arguing over what bill to pay, and how I'm going to pay this, how I'm going to get to my next paycheck, and what bill do I don't pay this paycheck? You know, I just had to keep putting bills off just because I wasn't making enough money. So we need a living wage.
Audra, I want to mention something that you brought up a little bit earlier, that a lot of workers in Illinois don't even make the minimum wage, right? Restaurant workers, or they have a different minimum wage, because there's tipping involved. Gig workers, people who drive for Uber, DoorDash, that sort of thing. The list goes on. How do you make sure, what should the policy be for making sure that those people have an opportunity to make a living wage?
So there's a lot of movement now to a national campaign called the One Fair Wage campaign to expose this notion of the sub-minimum wage, which is something that many folks and me as an advocate for a long time, I had to learn about too. And what this is basically is for individuals who are working in restaurants can be paid less than the, I'm going to use the word minimum wage, not living wage, but less than the minimum wage. There is a different rate for tipped employees. And in Illinois, I believe that wage is $7.80. So even now we're at $13.35 an hour right now for non-tip workers. For minimum wage workers, that is $7.80. And the presumption is that individuals who are working in tipped industries would be able to make up the difference between that base salary or that base hourly rate with tips. But without going into whole great detail about the origins of that, but do know that actually has a legacy in slavery and the fact that, when freed slaves were, working and it was in restaurant industries, because traditionally we didn't tip in the U.S. as a way to supplement income. A tip was something on top of a base wage. But when there was a wave of freed slaves who were competing with white males in the service industry, then that's when this whole origin of having a sub-minimum wage began. And we see this contemporarily now, where if you're in a restaurant, let's say a higher-end restaurant, there's a greater likelihood that you're going to be able to make up that difference. But the pandemic was exposed just the challenges of people who are working at a sub-minimum wage face, because they lost tips. Because remember, no one was going to restaurants. People weren't being tipped. People weren't in person. And now they were only required to be receiving that sub-minimum wage of $7.80. Their hours were cut. I mean, they were very much struggling. So that is why one of the things we are moving towards is to make sure that minimum wage workers are actually now at least moving up to that the regular minimum wage. And there's a movement underway in Illinois and across the country. Some might say, well, what about the impact to the businesses or the restaurants and there's a financial cost to them. And of course, there's going to be some cost to them. But the fact is, there are many states, particularly in the Chicago metropolitan area, many restaurants in the Chicago metropolitan area that have not only committed to raising the amount that they are paying their workers to a minimum of the $13, just like the rest of the minimum wage, but they have found that this has gone a great way to improve morale. It's been a great way for them to reduce the number of people who are leaving, because that revolving door costs money. Do not think for a second that it doesn't cost employers money to have to rehire. It's an incentive for them to maintain their workforces so that they're not incurring the costs of having to repost, rehire, retrain. So they have committed to paying this amount, and they've actually found the benefit to that, and they've been able to sustain it. So that's why it's important to talk about the fact that not only do we have folks who are making minimum wage, but there are those who are in the service and the tipped arena who are actually making less than, and in a federally mandated less than minimum wage, and that's called the sub-minimum wage.
Rob Carr, we're coming to the end of our time together, but I wanted to ask you Illinois is a very blue state. It's got Democratic unified control. In fact, the minimum wage bill, I think, was, if not the, certainly one of the first bills that Governor Pritzker signed when he came into office. What policy are you looking for out of state government on this, in this area going forward as we as we said, minimum wages are going, they're almost outpacing the minimum wage in some areas.
Well, as Audra noted earlier, it's a nuanced conversation, right? I think the state has set itself on a path and it should stick with that path. The market, as a result, particularly the pandemic, is adjusting. People are, in some cases, making more than that now. I think when you look at policies that address employment more broadly, I think the paid leave is a perfect example. Your listeners may not know this, but Irma actually wound up behind the paid leave bill, which was at 5 days. It's important to note, we offered seven, and proponents of paid leave rejected that because they wanted, and it's their words, not mine, suborned the seven to political interests in the city of Chicago. Workers could have had more, but nonetheless, industry was behind the five. I think it was done in such a way that it's easy. It's easy for the worker. It's easy for the employer. The previous models under these types of things have been, you can only do it for certain conditions. You have to have certain notes. You can only do it for certain people. This is a much more common sense approach. You get 5 days, you get it for whatever reason you want, and they're yours. And it makes it easy for both the employer and the employee. I think it addresses, it is a model that we might be able to use to have further discussions, but none of these discussions occur in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. All of them have to occur within broader economic impacts. Inflation, we haven't even begun to touch on. Supply chain, which is part of that inflation. All of those things add up. None of these things can be viewed in a vacuum. A $40 minimum wage would be absolutely catastrophic, not only for those who would like to make it, but for those who would like their first job and won't get it. And we are seeing a dearth, I might add, of basic job skills training as a result already today. So again, it's a very nuanced conversation that has to take into account a lot of factors.
And one we will continue to have on this program. Tyree, last word to you. What if you could name one thing that would help you and the workers you know survive and thrive? What would that change be?
Keep the pressure on these corporations. You know, it's not just about $15 on our paycheck. It's about a seat at the bargaining table, being able to bargain in good faith, and have all the necessary benefits we need to take care of our families. Just keep applying the pressure to these corporations, letting them know we're willing to do whatever it takes.
Tyree Johnson, Rob Carr, Audra Wilson, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.